This is the first day of our 3-month-long winter retreat. We established a different routines, different roles. These are human agreements we put together for a particular purpose, particular intention. So we can go from just being senior monk, junior nun, novice, Anagarika, junior monk, senior, long-term lay resident, lay guest. We shift into different modes, putting down our particular duties in the monastic community to be more focusing on being sahadamika, fellow Dhamma farers, fellow retreatants. The other roles and faculties carry on in the background. We change the mode of what we're doing. What's the intention to be focusing upon during each day? Lay guests now have the winter retreat support team handle a set of duties, expectations, conditions that go with that. For the long-term lay residents, similarly, we shift into different modes. Well, this is a part of our skill in Dhamma practice. It can be developed. A beneficial, liberating skill is to be able to put on and take off different roles, different identities, different times, going from being in a particular mode of teaching or traveling or responsible for this or that. That's relevant for a certain time, then you put it down. Picking up particular duties, coming to stay at the monastery for a month, 2 months, 3 months for the winter, then picking up the role of, oh, I'm looking after the locking doors, unlocking doors, I'm helping to organize the kitchen rota, I'm helping to take care of the office, looking after the sala, the temple. The degree to which we can be aware of the picking up and putting down of roles, identities, that degree is the degree to which the heart can be liberated. The more that there is an identification with particular roles, our age, our name, our gender, our state of ordination or lack of it, the degree to which the mind makes those real and solid is the degree to which it creates unnecessary boundaries, limitations, bondage. So this is an excellent time to reflect upon those particular sets of conditions. We say winter retreat, we have a schedule, pin it up on the doors. This is what we should be doing. Yes, those are the conventions. But in the background, to recognize this is a set of agreed behaviors. These things are given value and meaning by human agreement, not by much else. Those agreements have a value, but they're not absolute. They can't be anything substantial, ultimately real. Whether we call ourselves nun or monk, layperson, man, woman, human being, Buddhist, not Buddhist, these are labels that are ascribed according to convention, according to convenience, for practical purposes. That's all. Yesterday evening I was talking about not creating each other. That's the partner to not creating a self. The essence of Buddhist meditation, insight meditation, vipassana, is clarifying the quality of awakened awareness, this faculty of the heart that is present in every one of these lives, in every one of us. Clarifying that awake, aware quality to know these conditions, these patterns of behavior, the roles and responsibilities, the judgments we make about other people, but also how we create this person, our age, our name, our story, our identity, our list of successes and failures. The various aspects of the retreat, the encouragement towards noble silence, maintaining seclusion for the monastic community, a routine of formal practice, walking, sitting meditation, reflecting on the teachings, developing different aspects of meditation in terms of loving kindness or concentration. Mindfulness, these are all geared towards the central goal of clarifying the quality of awakened awareness. This is the aspect of this being that can be liberated. Our thoughts can't be liberated, our memories, our bodies, they're naturally limited. But the awake, aware quality of the heart, this very knowing quality that is receiving, knowing this moment, knowing these words, feeling the sensations of the body. This is what can be liberated. It's intrinsically limitless. It doesn't need liberating in and of itself, but it's obstructed by the mind's habits of attachment, identification, believing in conditioning, believing in worldly values. This which is aware of the five khandhas cannot be reckoned in terms of the five khandhas. This awareness that knows the body, knows hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. It has no skin, has no hair, no nails, no teeth. This which knows our face doesn't have a face. This which knows our hands and feet doesn't have hands and feet. It's not a person, doesn't belong to a person. Yet, here it is, the very means through which every moment, every aspect of this world, this life, is known. This awakened, aware quality of the heart, it's the most real thing, most real quality there is. But yet it can't be defined, can't be identified in terms of our ordinary sensory experience. As I quote over and over again, from the dialogue between the Buddha and Vachagota, the Tathagata is liberated from being reckoned in terms of form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness. He is profound, immeasurable, unfathomable, like the great ocean. So it's not just talking about the Buddha as an ancient sage of 2,500 years ago. This is referring to this awake, aware quality of this heart, this mind. This is the very fabric of this very life that we know, this world that we know, is known through the agency of this awake, aware quality, the vijja dhatu, the element of knowing. So at the beginning of this formal retreat time, these are principles it's helpful to clarify, to notice, to acknowledge the depth of conditioning, how it feels like this is my body, this is my mind, my practice. I am making these choices. I feel this. That is beautiful. That is ugly. I know this person well. I like them. I don't know this person well. I don't like them. All of the 1,001 judgments and perceptions the mind buys into during the day, this is the time to challenge those, to meet those habits of judgment, attachments to perception. Take a simple reflection like, this which knows the person is not a person. This which knows the body doesn't have a body. This which knows these thoughts is not a thought. This which knows these emotions, these loves and hates, fears and desires, it's not love or hate, has no fear or desire. It knows. It's aware. It knows those qualities. It knows the field of experience, but it's not limited by that, not identified with that. And even to use words like it and this, they give a kind of solidity or turn this quality of awareness into a thing. But awakened awareness is not really a thing in the world of other things. It's these words are simply convenient fictions that we use to refer to these qualities. So as a retreat time conventionally begins, today we have a routine of formal practice getting underway. Notice how strongly the mind can move towards my practice. I should develop more concentration. I need to get rid of my chattering thoughts. I should be more alert. I'm lost in sleepiness again. To use this day to look at that I-making, mind-making habit. My mind, my feelings, my practice. I should, I must. We can't make those vanish or be recognized as empty just by an act of will. But at least the depth of conditioning can be appreciated. How convincing those attitudes and thoughts seem to be. The more that the practice of Dhamma is based on self-view, I need to be more concentrated, I should be working harder, I am very distracted. The more that I am, I have, I should is taken as real, then practice is being based on self-view, sakkaya ditti. Notice that, if that's the case. Feel that, know that, and to the extent possible, let go, so that instead the practice of Dhamma is guided by mindfulness and wisdom, satipanya, rather than the eye-making, mind-making habit. Giving a direction to the practice, having a goal to the practice, putting forth effort in the practice, none of these need to involve any sense of I or me or mine. The heart's delighting in truth itself. Dhamma delighting in its own nature, the nature of the way things are. This is the motivating force of the practice. Mindfulness and wisdom come from that love of reality. and delight in knowing reality, attunement to reality, the timeless, selfless, limitless, formless quality of knowing. The more that the practice can be guided by mindfulness and wisdom in this way, rather than self-view, then that effort is joyful. There can be a goal, a direction, but it's not obsessive or stressful. Having a direction, having a goal, is not something intrinsically limiting. Putting forth effort is not necessarily stressful or burdensome. When the motivating force, the energy of the practice, comes from mindfulness and wisdom, attunement to the present reality, then direction is given, choices are made, effort is put forth, but it's a quality of engagement that is energetic but peaceful. It's directed but not stressful, not limited, not burdensome. This is a way of working that we can know. It's like going out for a walk. You're not heading for a particular goal with an obsessive attitude, but you're heading in that direction. Walking down the footpath across the river Gade, up to the wood on the other side. There's a direction, but you're just going for a walk. Energy is being put forth, but it's not burdensome. You're not trying to get anything or be anyone. The same kind of naturalness and ease can be brought to the work of meditation. So as the practice is guided, the attention gathered to this present experience, to the extent possible, you let mindfulness and wisdom be the guiding force. And let all the habits of I-making, mind-making, all the shoulds, I must, I should, I ought to, notice that, feel that. Let them go.